Work is a big part of many of our lives, and Solomon addresses it in the Proverbs. Here's Pastor Dave Roth.
If you, and the Bible says this all the time, if you want to eat, you should work. If you put in your effort, your labor, if you do that, then things are going to be better for you than if you don't. But it's also more than that. It's also, there's a way to work at something that isn't worth working for. And it leads to this emptiness. It really doesn't click the way it's supposed to.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hand. And the instrument I play. Wake up my voice. Let the world hear me say, you are worshiped and exalted here today.
Someone has observed there are three kinds of workers. For example, when a piano is to be moved, the first kind gets behind and pushes. The second pulls and guides. And the third grabs the piano stool. What kind of worker are you? The Bible has a lot to say about our work, probably because it's such a big part of our lives. Today on The Balanced Word, we'll turn to the Proverbs and receive some great principles about work that we can apply as we clock in each day. It's part of Dave Rolfe's series, Smarter Living.
Solomon has a lot to say about work. There's a lot of wisdom in there, and it's a good thing because work is an important part of our lives. And so as we look at some of the Proverbs to see what he has to teach us, we also get some help in things that, like, we make work as being so important. Like, when little kids, you know, one of the things that we ask them is, what are you going to be when you grow up? I mean, that kind of implies that your identity is all in what you do for a living. And even the idea of what do you do for a living is like, this is what your life is. This is what it's all about. And so we have a lot of messages like that. The word career comes from an old Latin word that meant a racetrack. It's like, okay, we're careening. That comes from that word too. Car comes from that. It's all the idea that what life is just a big push. And today, more people are starting to talk about a work-life balance. They're starting to recognize that life isn't just about work. And it's a good thing because there are a whole lot of people who are out of work. We tend to say how the economy is going based on how many people are working. And they'll say the unemployment rate is under 5%, and that's a good thing. But in our country, there are like 84 million people over the age of 21 who aren't working right now. 84 million. Now, some of them are retired, they're older people, some of them are still full-time students, but there are a significant number of people who, for whatever reason, aren't working. Now, if you decide that work is who you are, how do you deal with that? How do you work through all that? And Solomon gives us some real wisdom, but before we get into the study, I just want to remind you of where work came from. We glamorize and glorify work so much, but originally, I don't think work was God's intent. When in Genesis 2, when God created the first two people, he told them, you know, you're in the garden, and he did tell Adam, tend the garden. I don't know how hard it was to tend the garden when there were no weeds or anything, but tending the garden may have just meant picking the fruit that you're going to eat. He gave Adam a creative task of naming all the animals, but other than that, it seemed like they had an existence that was a lot like a vacation, only better. But when they sinned, part of what the consequence of that was, God told the woman, Eve, now when you have babies, it's going to hurt. And also, you're going to have this tension between you and your husband. There's going to be this thing where you really want to force him to be what you think he ought to be. That's just the way it is. It's part of the curse. But then to the man, he said, you're going to work by the sweat of your brow for the rest of your life. Weeds are going to grow, and you're going to have to farm. And basically, work was something that was a part of the curse. Now, we can't stop it. It's a necessary evil, but it's a part of what happened when the world wasn't what it was supposed to be. And so when we talk about work, let's understand this isn't God's original design. This is something that we have to do as a result of fallen world and the fact that we're fallen people. Now, let's turn over to Proverbs chapter 12 and verse 11. And we see one of the principles that Solomon points out here. Proverbs 12, verse 11 says, "He who tills his land will be satisfied with bread, but he who follows frivolity," or the word really means meaninglessness, "is devoid of understanding." So it's productive work that brings about provision, or it's work that's kind of worthless, that isn't going anywhere, that ultimately is something that he says, if you do that, you don't get it. You just don't understand. It's important for us the first thing he says, obvious, and the Bible says this all the time, if you want to eat, you should work. If you put in your effort, your labor, if you do that, then things are going to be better for you than if you don't. But it's also more than that. It's also, there's a way to work at something that isn't worth working for. And it leads to this emptiness. It really doesn't click the way it's supposed to. And Solomon makes the real point to it. And ultimately, there's a verse over in chapter 28 that says the same thing, but he says, then you'll be impoverished instead of, you know, you're devoid of understanding. But what he's saying here about understanding is, if you don't get it, then your work is going to end up being worthless. Your work is going to turn out to be frivolous. So it's about what you know that can actually help you to have productive work. Now, we all know this to a certain degree. We all experience this during the day. There are some things we do that we're like, wow, that really worked. That was really helpful. That really produced. But every one of us has parts of our day when we're like, I was working really hard, but nothing good happened. Nothing came out of it at all. Well, the more that we understand, the more that we understand priorities, and we're able to know, how can I put my work in a way that's going to produce maximum results? But, you know, at the same time, if I don't do that, and if I'm not working on things that are productive, I'm just going to end up broke, and I'm going to be somebody who just doesn't get it. I don't understand why life is treating me this way. I don't understand. God must hate me. No, maybe you just don't get it. Maybe you're not listening to him and doing the kinds of things that will be productive in your life. Now, you know, here is a basic principle that you find throughout the scriptures, and we sometimes call it the law of sowing and reaping. The idea that what you sow, you will end up reaping, as the metaphor of the farmer. Really what it is, and if you don't understand this, you'll never understand anything. What you do today affects what your life will be in the future. If you do this, then this will happen. Now, sometimes you get discouraged because you put in your best effort in something that seems really important, and it doesn't go well. But again, this is a fallen world. It doesn't happen every time, but ultimately, consistently, you decide. And it's a great privilege that God has given us, self-determination, that what I do actually has an effect on my future. I can create my own future. And so Solomon's just making that clear. Realize this, what you do today will impact your tomorrow. And if you think it won't, you don't understand. You don't get it. You're just wrong. So, you know, I think really probably the number one principle in the whole Bible is that what you do now affects your future. Now, let's look over in chapter 14 and verse 23 for Solomon's next principle on work. He says here, in all labor, there is profit. Every kind of work accomplishes something. But idle chatter leads only to poverty. Talk is cheap. He sets off talking and working as two different things. Now, this gets kind of tricky when your job is to talk. Like for me, it's like, how do I tell you that, you know, I should be working, not talking, when my work is talking? So maybe I should just shut up and let you go home early. But I'm not going to do that. You know that. You know, but they've done study. The Yale University did a study about people who talk at work. And there's a direct correlation between people who talk a lot at work and people who hit the ceiling of promotion. It really does mess you up as an employee if you are the person who talks too much. Now, if you've never worked with somebody who talks too much, then probably you talk too much. And you just can't figure, you just think everybody always looks at their watch, checks their phone and everything during a conversation. That just seems normal to you. But Solomon makes it clear here, hey, you can either work or you can talk. We think in our culture, we believe that we can multitask. And it's really foolish. Scientifically, it's impossible for your brain to do two things at once. Now, people who seem like they multitask, it's just that they shift gears really fast between multiple things. But when you try to multitask, you're messing up, you're sacrificing one thing for another. You cannot be working while you're talking. I've known people who think, you know, they sit there thinking that they're working while they're talking on the phone or whatever. You're fooling yourself. Either you work or you talk. Now, some jobs require a certain amount of talking. At that point, that's what you're doing. That's a part of what your job is. But ultimately, the more you talk, the less work you're going to produce. That's what Solomon's really saying here. Talk is cheap. Either work or talk. You have to decide which one is more valuable for you. Now turn over to chapter 22 and verse 29. Proverbs 22 and verse 29, where Solomon says this. Do you see a man who excels in his work? He will stand before kings. He will not stand before unknown men. So here he is saying that ultimate promotion when it comes to work has to do with excelling in your work, really succeeding and doing it extremely well. The Hebrew word for excel there really refers to water that's flowing. It's the idea is there are people who can do something and it's just smooth. It actually flows. Some people can make a hard job look easy. And the way they do that is because they've been practicing so long, they've developed their skills, they've done it enough times that they can actually make it look easy. It is not easy. When you would watch a great athlete perform, you think of Michael Jordan as a basketball player, Kobe Bryant, you know, these guys made basketball look easy, but that was forged in hundreds and thousands of hours of doing a play over and over again, practicing a move over and over again so that it was finally smooth. Well, what Solomon's saying here is you should look for people like that. Find people that you admire because what they do at their work, they just make it look easy. They are so successful. And he says these are the people who are going to ultimately be promoted. These are the people who will be successful. So find successful people and see how they do what they do. Every once in a while, I'll see an article where someone gets very successful people and asks them a question like, and you could Google and see lots of these. They're really informative. They'll ask them, what is the most important thing that you've learned to incorporate into your work life? And it's fascinating. Solomon's just saying, look at those kind of people. When you look at a person who's really good at what they do, who performs at an excellent level, there's something that you can learn from that. And really, that's a, you know, promotion comes because of doing that, really. You can learn a lot from successful people. And that's what Solomon's really saying. And beyond learning from successful people, I think he would say, why don't you be that person? You figure out how you can excel. You figure out what success would look like for you and live that example when it comes to your work life. And so that's obviously, you'd get a lot better service when you go need service from a business if more people would put this into practice. And every one of us has something to learn by people who excel in business, for sure, in their work. Now turn over to chapter 23, it's just probably on the same page, verses 4 and 5. Solomon says, do not overwork to be rich. Because of your own understanding, cease. Will you set your eyes on that which is not? For riches certainly make themselves wings. They fly away like an eagle, toward heaven. So it's weird because he's like been preaching about work and saying, hey, if you work, then you're going to reap rewards. If you work in an excellent way, you'll serve as an example and you'll be promoted. And then a few verses later, he goes, oh, by the way, you can overdo this. You can overwork. And it's not just about overworking, but it's specifically overworking with the motivation to be wealthy, to have more than you need. Now, there's absolutely nothing wrong with being wealthy. There's nothing wrong with being successful. Sometimes that's a blessing from God, and sometimes that's produced by working really well and working really hard. But what Solomon would tell us is richness, wealth, is not a good motivation for why you work. I mean, partly it's going to be disappointing because some people just work really hard. They're just not good at what they do, and they continue to fail. But beyond that, riches aren't the goal of life. Making me rich is not something that I should hold out there as, hey, this is what I want to do. As we understand that, we need to realize, you know, wealth just isn't the right motivation. If it comes, it comes. Usually you will be successful when you're doing something that you're passionate about and you do it really well, and then it might pay off. But if you're doing it for that as a motivation, you know, all work, you cannot make up in volume what you lack in quality when it comes to work. All work has diminishing returns. In other words, it's not always the more you work, the more you receive, the more benefit that you have. And you know that sometimes during the day, you come in the morning and you're, you know, after a couple of cups of coffee and you're all pumped and man, you can be really productive. The most productive you can be is when you go to work on a holiday and nobody else is there to interrupt you. I love those days. But here's the thing. Later on in the afternoon, you're not as productive. You're starting to get tired. Maybe you went out to lunch and rewarded yourself with a Mexican food lunch, and you come back and you're just like, whoa. You end up working late. And I've fallen into this a lot of times in my life where I just somehow, I'm insecure enough in the quality of my work that I think I'm going to make up for this with volume. I'm just going to work a lot more. But we've all experienced this. Very seldom is the quality of work that you do when you're, you know, after hours or on weekends or something, very seldom does that pay off. If you work 6 days a week instead of five, you are not 20% more productive, okay? And that's what Solomon's saying. There comes a point when there's a time to work, and there comes a point where there's a time to stop. And if you don't understand that, you will wear yourself out and you'll be killing the goose that lays the golden egg. You will make yourself lose your ability to produce because you're just knocking yourself out. Interesting study I read years ago comparing the Reagan White House, boy, those were the good old days, to the Jimmy Carter White House. You know, one president, one that we, most of us look at and say, wow, what a great President Reagan was. On the other hand, Jimmy Carter, a guy that until recently everybody thought was the worst president we've ever had. Carter was a really good guy, and he worked long hours. But in this study, they interviewed people from both administrations, and they found that, you know, that Reagan hired professional people. And, you know, Carter hired Southerners, friends of his. He was a peanut farmer. He just knew how to work. Reagan's guys knew how good they were, how smart they were. So they would all come in and, you know, Reagan would show up in the Oval Office at like 9:30 in the morning, look over a few newspapers, eat some jelly beans, and he'd be gone for lunch by 11 to go have lunch with somebody and come back. And he'd get off work about 4 o'clock and take his wife out to the theater or something like that. And everybody in his administration lived sort of the same way. But they found that these guys were so secure in their abilities that they knew, if I put in a good 7 hours, that's all this job really needs. The Carter administration, on the other hand, they were constantly insecure. Jimmy Carter would be up in his office at 4 a.m. reading 12 newspapers, just obsessing. And he would be there at work until 11 o'clock at night, sometimes later. Just so trying hard. And you feel kind of bad for people that do that because it never really works out that well anyhow. But as they interviewed people from the Carter administration, they noticed something, that whenever they were called to question about anything that they had done, whether it was President Carter or other people in his administration, they would say, look, I'm in the office at 4 in the morning and I'm here until 10 o'clock at night. They defended their incompetency by trying to show that, look, I'm trying as hard as I can. But what Solomon would tell us is, you don't need to do that. You don't need to overdo it. You need to find some kind of balance, to realize that what I do in an honest day, and I give an honest day's work for an honest day's wage, that's okay, that's enough. I don't need to just get obsessed, because again, if you're working too late, you're really not very effective at all anyway, and I think most of us know this.
We're receiving God's wisdom from the Proverbs right here on The Balanced Word with Pastor Dave Roth. It's part of a series called Smarter Living. And you can request a CD copy by calling 949-362-7475. I should also mention this entire series is available on a USB for a donation of $10 or more. You'll receive all 51 messages in the series that'll lead you to smarter living as you hear and learn to live by God's wisdom from the Proverbs. So call us at 949-362-7475 and ask for the Smarter Living Thumb Drive. Our programs are also available online at thebalancedword.com. Thank you for your support of the Balanced Word Radio Ministry. It allows us to bring Pastor Dave's teachings to stations like this one all across the nation. Donations can be made at thebalancedword.com. Dave Rolfe is the pastor of Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo. You can hear him teach on a Sunday morning at any one of these three times, 8, 9:45, and 11:30. Visit ccpacifichills.org for more information or to live stream. Check out Pastor Dave's one-minute messages, a great way to start the day. You can listen to them at thebalancedword.com or watch them on Instagram or Facebook by following CC Pacific Hills. Let's return to the Proverbs for another principle on work.
Let's turn over to chapter 10, back to chapter 10, and verse 16. Solomon says in Proverbs 10:16, "The labor of the righteous leads to life, the wages of the wicked to sin." Basically is saying, there's two different ways to work. If you are righteous, then life, a good life is a result of righteous living and righteous working. And at the same time, if you are wicked, if you're out of line with God's plan, all you get is more sin. Now, sin is a word that the Bible uses to describe when you settle for less than God's best for you. And so what he's saying is basically that you have a choice, and it all comes down to, what kind of person do you want to be? Do you want to be someone who is doing it right and therefore experiencing everything that God has for you, a great life? Or do you want to compromise, cut corners, and end up reaping that at the end of your life you just look and go, this was a total loss. I never became who I really felt God wanted me to be. I never became who I wanted to be. It's like, and really what Solomon's saying here is, work is not about what you do. Life is about who you are. And ultimately, your identity can't be in what you do for a living, supposedly, but life is about who you become as a person. Your character, if you develop your character, work will take care of itself. But if you compromise on your character, work is going to fail you completely. And you're just going to get more and more failure in your life. And it's so sad, because some people work harder at being a jerk than other people would have to work to be a decent person. But ultimately, see, when you come to the end of your life, and let's say it's your funeral and you're able to somehow float around and listen to it, what do you want people to say about you? Boy, what a good worker. they were. I always think it's sad when I do a lot of funerals, unfortunately, and a lot of times you get the feeling that all they can say about this person is they had a job, you know, and people at their work, you know, it was, yeah, he was a hard worker. And that's a good thing. That can be a credit. But ultimately, don't you want people to say the kind of person that you were instead of just the kind of worker that you were? Life is not about production. Life is not about work. Work is a very important part of life, but life is ultimately about character.
We'll return to the subject of work next time out. The Balanced Word with Dave Roth is brought to you by Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hands. And yeah.